Okay, we're going to be in Titus 2.
Yes.
Chumley, wish me good luck.
I'm not sure
what he knows about you all. I don't know if you would feel the need to do that. Let's pray today. Bless us, Father, as we ponder how we can be lights in our culture and help others find their way to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So I want to look at verses 3, 4, and 5, Titus 2. Are you preparing your Bible? I bet this will be familiar to you. Older women likewise, which is a gutsy beginning, I mean. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good. We looked at that last week. So that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. When I started this class, and kind of was thinking through the segments I'd like to look at, this was really high on my list. This is one of the passages that I thought a lot about, mainly because it uses that idea directly here that we began class with. Look at the end of verse 5. So that the word of God will not be dishonored. Do you see that? It's a negative statement of the positive we frame class with. And that is, we want to go out and we want to have an impact in a good way through a godly life on the culture around us. This is presenting the negative side of that. The danger that, by the way we live in the example of said, we might actually dishonor the gospel. And more to this little section of three verses, he seems to be saying that it is possible for a woman's behavior in connection with her family could cause the gospel to be dishonored. Now, don't make that a uniquely female thing, okay? Because you could also argue it from a man's perspective too. A man's failure in his family relationships could negatively reflect on the gospel. The principle is the important thing. I wonder, do you guys agree with that? That a person's behavior in their family relationships could hamper the spread of the gospel, could reflect negatively on the gospel. Y'all buy that? Yes. Knowing that if you say no, you're going to disagree with the Holy Spirit.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all. Y'all go right ahead and tackle that. Unpack it for me. What does that mean to you? Why do you agree with that? Yeah.
I think we're examples of how Christ, we should be examples of how Christ should be. So if we are rearing up kids and we are showing them something that's completely against how Christ is, it could turn them away from being Christian.
So like immediately on your children, the most powerful area where we have influence with our own kids. Thank you for that. Somebody else? Yes. Oh, man, you're going to have to. Come on.
I could go, but you know, your neighbors, in dealing with your neighbors, and all you do is like bash your husband and what a jerk he is, or you know,
which we could never fathom, Jill. No.
Well, I don't do that because I don't have a jerk of a husband.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, then why would they want what you have?
Okay.
If your kids are unruly, if you know, you don't take care of things, if you're rude, if you're to your husband, if your husband talks poorly about you, I mean, all those things. I mean, nobody wants a piece of that.
Yeah. When Heidi and I were very young, newly married, like the first year, we were living, we may have still been members here, we were living down Louetta in an apartment, and some Jehovah's Witnesses came to the door. And so we started studying with them. It was a married couple. A good bit older than us. They were like married with kids and all that. And we were still almost teenagers. But during one part of the study, the wife had spoken up and said something that was not helpful to the husband. It was actually helpful to what we were trying to say. And he was not happy about that. And berated her in front of us. It was very awkward. And so I was trying to figure out what to do about that. Because, I mean, he's way older than me. You know, he's probably like 35. But at the beginning of the next study, what I decided to do is I called him out for it. And just said, in my home, like, a man can't speak to his wife that way. Not going to have that here. And, of course, it was mortifying for him. But I have to tell you, it shaped the way we felt about what he said. Like, how can you line this up? And this is kind of what you were getting at. This claim to be a follower of Jesus, and then in front of us, speak to your wife that way. It was incongruent. It did not fit together. Does that make sense? Maybe you've had an experience like that. Have you had a disciple that you've observed that just behaved beyond the pale?
And if he does that in front of other people, think about how he behaves.
Don't you always go there? Always. If they do that on the, because we're always putting our best foot forward, I hope, in front of other people, right? And so, yeah, you even go, well, if this is what he's doing here at dinner with us, what happens when we don't see? See what I'm saying? Yes, sir.
So, my version uses blasphemy. Rather than dishonor, but it makes me think about anything we do. That we say one thing as a Christian and people see us do something else. You know, I know we're talking about this, but I think we have to think about the fact that it's about our entire life.
Well, yes, it's the whole class, you're right.
And, right. So it's how we present ourselves regardless of what situation, because people see us say one thing and do another, it discredits you.
Yeah, it's got to line up, right? Especially, now think about this, I'm going to push this another step. Especially when you're talking about people who are outsiders, who are not Christians. Why is it,
we're talking about, you know, among ourselves, when we see things among other disciples. What about when a person who is not a Christian is looking at us? Why does that make it even tougher?
Action speaks louder than words.
They do. What you do is shouting over what you say. I think that's right. Thank you. Yeah.
I think of that list, I think the biggest thing I think that we're battling, or that you can a woman can show about God, is the being subject to her own husband. That is so, has been under attack in our society now, because, you know, I'm an independent woman. No man's going to tell me what to do. I mean, that alone might be one of the biggest impacts that Christian women can have on other women when they see them being subject to their own husband, because that is, there's just in total clash against what's going on in society as far as women being independent, no man tells me what to do, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to punt on that, because I'm going to work that specifically later. We're going to actually go to Ephesians 5. So hold that thought, I'm going to circle back there. One of the things I was looking for is how much more critically an outsider looks at a Christian. Have y'all detected that in culture? Do you know what I mean by that? In fact, there's almost this delight if I can catch a Christian doing something that isn't Christ-like, right? So we're working with a tougher audience, is what I'm trying to say. It's one thing for that kind of thing to happen among us, but when people on the outside who are looking for reasons to criticize,
they expect to see something different in a Christian relationship, family, husband, wife, whatever, that's differentiating.
Yeah, and we're going to be noticed, and we're going to be judged. You with me on that? Yes, sir.
So, if it's among Christians, one of two things should happen. I should either realize it and correct it.
Right.
Or if I don't, they should realize it
right.
and come to me, because we're a family. And in a family, you know, we're human. We're going to do things that are wrong, but we as a family can work together to fix it.
Right.
Outsider, they see you and go off, and never again may you have a chance.
Might not even know that they took exception to your behavior. Thank you for that. Let me flip this over, though, and say to you that while this danger exists that we need to be sensitive to, do you also see the opportunity that's here? Because if they're noticing and judging, what does that give us an opportunity to do?
Reflect Jesus.
Yeah, to show the better way. So this is Matthew 5:16. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good work and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And so what I want you to think with me about today is the opportunity to help people see that through family. And I have a couple of ideas I want to explore about that. One of them is this. You know, we're really late in the class. And so if I told you I'd really been thinking about this passage, it was one of the first passages, then maybe you're wondering, okay, well, why is it like the next to the last class before you get to it? And the reason is because I have been uncomfortable raising this topic of using family as a door to share the gospel. So do any of you feel a little sketchy about that? Do you have a thought about that? Using your family as an opportunity to open doors to share the gospel.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, maybe I'm just weird.
That's a good one.
Well.
And your fears have been confirmed.
Elaborate on that.
I think I better cut my losses and move on.
You notice it was women who were like,
okay, wait, David's going to rescue me all the way back.
Is it because you know your own faults, right? And you know where your wrinkles are and things like that in your family? Is that your husband?
Yeah, I think that there are some people, when it comes to winning lost folks, who are uncomfortable with what comes off as a gimmick. And one of the concerns I had about this topic is it would come off kind of gimmicky to say, hey, we're going to use our children to kind of draw people to Jesus. That's kind of what I was worried about, which clearly is a concern none of y'all have. What?
You coached kids in baseball. Didn't you use that as an opportunity?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
So, I mean, that seemed natural, though, didn't it?
You would think. Is it natural for you guys? Y'all feel good about that, too? And it isn't really using your family, is it? What is it?
An opportunity.
Taking advantage of an opportunity that already exists. My family, me, my wife, our relationship, my kids, my interactions with them, people are watching me do that. And they're going to take notice of it. That's going to happen however I feel about it or not. I just think it is one of those things, and this is really the next thing I wanted to get to. Maybe we can just move on to that. I think it's an opportunity that exists there. The question is, are we going to take advantage of it or not? Because people are noticing that. You mentioned the ball games, right? Do you notice the interactions between parents and their kids at the Little League field? Do you judge?
Yes.
Yes. I think we need a set of referees for the game and a set of referees for the stand to manage the parents that are up there, right? And so this is going on all the time. We do it too, okay? So it's not a thing we're doing to be seen. It's something we're doing is seen. And I think it's a glorious opportunity for the gospel, because I think people notice family. They notice what's happening in marriages, and they know what's happening between parents and their kids. Why would that be true? I need to advance my slide, I think. Let me see.
Jill's got her hand up.
Does she? That could be your job for the rest of the class, to tell me when Jill has her hand. Because I ask you to go like this. You know?
I know.
I'm sorry. I mean, jump in.
I just want to say, when you have a younger family, you really need to lean into it, too, because now, at my age, I don't have all the other PTO moms. I don't have the other baseball moms. I don't have the scout families to interact with. I have much smaller world than I used to. And so if you have kids that are still doing all those things, you got to lean into it.
Thank you for that. It's a great thing to think about, and that is the fact that we're going through a season of life that will pass. And you know, you wake up one day and there are no ball games on the schedule, there's no more football games, no more marching on Friday night, and it's glorious in terms of the time you have after that. But I think Jill is really right in that your opportunities, especially, listen, it was a big deal for me because I don't have any Bible studies with guys I work with. Right? I have not converted many of my coworkers since I've been preaching. And so you're right, ball games and school activities were our contact with the world out there. And when your kids are grown, that opportunity is lost. Let me run that path just one step further. And what is interesting about the parenting stage of life that is good for the gospel? Was that a terrible question? Why is that a good stage of life for the gospel, the parenting season?
Show your priorities.
Okay. Priorities. Thank you.
Children bring people together.
Children bring people together. Thank you.
They're not. Children are very bold. My grandson will go up to some man in the bleachers and be like, "You go to church?"
And sometimes say things you don't want them to say.
Yeah.
Like that lady in the store needs to put some clothes on. These are true stories. Yes, sir.
My bank was rolling wallets in Corpus Christi years ago. He said, "Man, you have any idea why I'm a Christian?" I said, "Roland, I told him." He said, "Roland Vannoy, the co-worker with me in the banking business, I was under him. I watched him for 14 years. And one day I said, Roland, what is it that you have that I do not have? Would you sit down and tell me what is it you have?"
Yeah.
He's one of our neighbors in Temple. Mm-hmm. But I think the impact of modeling, I don't care if it's 16, 13, 18, 5, those things impact people.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so think about the parents at the ballpark. What are they going through right now?
Right. More important.
I mean, when y'all were raising your kids, were any of y'all utterly confused and terrified and trying to figure out how to do this thing right and terrified that you wouldn't do it right and all that kind of stuff?
I was a scorekeeper, so I'd keep my mouth shut.
Parenting levels the playing field. I mean, because if you're a parent, you're a parent. I mean, yeah. It's not like maybe there are some things that matter, like if you have more money than I have, but at the end of the day, we're still parenting, and that kind of levels the playing field, unless that parent is just letting a nanny do it. But generally speaking, regardless of our situation, we're still having to deal with parenting.
Right. Yeah. And it's a season of life where I think people are open to help, right? With me on that? Yes, ma'am.
We didn't do the baseball thing. We did the band thing. But on Wednesday night, Dell would come and get Krim or one of the kids out of band. And all he had to do was go like this, and the band director would roll his eyes because he didn't want the kids to leave. So, before the year was over, though, because Dell helped him on the bus with the kids, helped load all the equipment, and Graham and one of the, you know, Emery, whoever was in band, did too, and they stayed. And Graham set up the chairs, he put out the music. He said, "I've never had a student do this, and I've never had a parent do this." And by the end, you know, about halfway into the season, he was going, "Hey, Graham, your dad's here." You know,
that's such a bad thing then, wasn't it?
Yeah, "Hey, Emery, your dad's here." You know, so it. What do you do in their world?
Yeah, it's a light, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I wrote down in my notes that I wanted to mess around with tonight was the fact that I think there is in our culture a longing for family. Y'all buy that? Mm-hmm. Y'all see that? In fact, what I found interesting is that when you survey people, a majority will tell you that they think the traditional way of doing family, mom and dad together, raising their children, is the right way and the way they want things to be. But for a variety of reasons, for most people, that isn't happening. Explore that with me. What's happened to traditional family?
They're not in church.
Sorry?
They're not in church.
Well, yeah, that's part of the problem.
They don't have a model.
Well, I hear 45% of the kids in the U.S. are in single-family homes right now.
Okay, you got single-parent homes. That's an element of it. Fatherlessness is recognized as a huge problem in culture today. Yes, ma'am.
A lot of kids are in foster care or group homes, mm-hmm. so they don't have families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, none at all altogether.
Or they were adopted into a single mom or single dad.
Or grandmother or grandfather. Mm-hmm. Raising.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I think a lot of it is the selfish and lack of having commitment. Because a lot of them will say that until all of a sudden they're not happy in their marriage and then they go out and find somebody else.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
I think it's also your, and when you said selfish, I thought you were going here, the reason for wanting to be parents. Some people, we're supposed to be bringing children to this world so we can give them back to God. But a lot of people want to be parents just so I can have a cute little, mini-me, and whatever the case may be. And then you lose that purpose of bringing someone up to give them back to God.
Or don't have a purpose.
Or don't have a purpose.
One of the interesting stats is that, now this isn't true of religious people, but in the world, marriage is being delayed later and later and later. You know what the average age is now to get married?
30.
Older for men. 30. So people are marrying later and later and later in life. By the way, do you know why that is?
Money.
No. Yes, yes, because it isn't necessary. People are choosing to cohabit. Why women sign off on that, I don't know. I don't know, because the guy's getting the benefit, right? And so what happens is you get all the benefit of marriage and just walk away whenever you want to. So cohabitation is a huge problem because now the stigma has been removed from it. And some as a result of that, never marry at all. If the thing is working, why do we bother? Why do we even need to be concerned with getting married? Fewer children are being born in America today. The birth rate is declining year after year. And when they're born later in life and more outside of marriages, right? In fact, it's interesting that statistically, women have come to believe that marriage is not a path, or not just marriage, but marriage and family and children, family, is not a path for happiness for them. And so a growing number of women, who said that earlier? Somebody brought that up. A growing number of women have that mindset, and happiness in marriage is declining. Increasing number of people are pessimistic about marriage in America. But here's the interesting thing about all that, okay? Married people are far happier than unmarried people. Someone says, well, that doesn't make any sense. I know. Why is the data all mixed up? Why would people say marriage isn't the answer when the married people are the ones who are most happy?
Why did they get married? What's the question?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot wrapped up in that, right? I mean, that's a whole class of back home. That's exactly right. What we've done is we've made a mess, a family. And people are, here's what I think. I think people know something isn't right. They still know what it is. I had a kid in my office several years ago. And I figured out through a social media post that he was living with this girl and felt like I needed to talk to him about it. And when I first brought it up to him, he was very defensive. He's like, yeah, there's no problem with that. That's not wrong. And even in the way he defended it, you could tell he didn't believe what he was saying, right? And I mean, I just pushed him just a little bit. And within 5 minutes, the guy was saying, yeah, I know it's wrong. We shouldn't be living together like this. He knew there was something not right about what he was doing. I just wanted a church-going kid. But his heart, he knew it wasn't right. So I think there's an opportunity for God's people to shine here. That's what I want to impress you with. I think people are longing for what you have. Whether it's a godly marriage, or the process you're using to raise your children, or even what you're doing with your grandkids, or the example of your marriage. I think people are longing for that. And it's an opportunity for us to be lights. Yes, sir.
Work, people ask how long have you been married? It's kind of funny.
Which is how long, Scott?
42
years.
Yeah. So, when people hear that at work, it's like,
what?
So it's the exception and not the rule. Mm-hmm. And so it's sad because, you know, just on my team, there's like 17 people going through divorce, and there's only 140 people on our team. It's like, it's heartbreaking.
It is.
I was going to say something, too. I have a friend, non-Christian friend. She goes to church, but not Church of Christ. And she told her boyfriend that she would marry him only if they stay living separate and have all their bills the same as they've been doing, because that's the way people do it these days.
Well, and so appreciate, guys, I think we forget about this, that to an unbelieving world, this relationship, marriage, children, with biological mom and dad, all of that, to the world, that's just an evolutionary process. I mean, something else was going on when we were in a lower form, and we've evolved to here, and so this is how we've decided to relate to each other here. But in a million years, what will it be? Who knows? That's all it is. There's nothing unique or special about the way we've chosen to order our society with our families. That's just where we are in evolution right now. Yes, ma'am.
We just celebrated our 48th, and probably for the past 20 years, when people find out how long we've been married, they'll say, what's your secret? And I think they're expecting a funny answer like, I always say, yes, dear. but I say, in short, I'll say, it's our faith. And if they are truly interested, I say, well, if you're building a house, you're not going to build it without a blueprint. And God has given us a blueprint for marriage and family.
And so, plug that into what I just said, because that is exactly my point. Thank you for that. That the world just sees this as something we've evolved to. That is not our view of this at all. But that, in fact, the relationship I share with my wife is by divine design. God originated that, made us for each other, and then laid out the blueprint for how we are to relate to each other, right? He even gave us a printed book, right? Where you go and get the data. By the way, best marriage manual ever. Read this before you read any PhD or see any therapist, and this overrules everybody else, okay? Why? Because it comes from the manufacturer. And so keep in mind, we're fundamentally doing things in a different way than everybody else, because we have a fundamental view of what family is. Where family came from. Were you waving at me?
I did.
Y'all are so helpful to me. I'm so grateful for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Another thing I noticed is that the way we view the age that you get married has changed. Like, my grandma got married at, like, my age, 20. And back then, that was, like, completely normal. That was perfectly fine.
Back then?
Okay. My grandpa was also in the Army at the time. So, like, it was
the last century.
Get very young. And but then now when I told my mom, I was like, I want to get married at 20, and my mom's like, don't you dare. Like, it's considered, like, the fact that people, like, for people to get married at, like, 20, like 20 and 21 is now looked at as, like, wrong. Like, you're too young, you can't love anyone that, like, at that age. But then back then, if you got married, it was fine.
Oh, my mom was 15. And I think this is being broadcasted. she may actually be watching this right now. By the way, I should have said when I brought up that stat earlier that 30 is not the stat for Christians, right? And that makes sense. Why? Because Christians are going to live together. That's exactly right. So I think the Christian number is like 5 years younger than that, like 24, 25, which usually means it's falling right after you finish school. That's when Christians tend to get married. So it's different in that regard.
How many movies and TV shows show faithful, loving couples in marriage? It's always some sort of betrayal, some sort of backstabbing. What it's always the negative. I think people are afraid of the commitment because they're afraid they're going to get hurt.
Yeah, we are really facing an upstream fight. I watch virtually no regular television. I couldn't even tell you a sitcom that's on television right now. And so I don't know the answer to that. I do know that from the little bit I've seen, it's always, families are always oddly connected together, right? It's like two sisters and an uncle bringing up four kids, right? Some odd arrangement. And very rarely do you see those relationships as healthy. They're always a little bit wacky and dysfunctional, which is the brunt of the humor, correct? And so I think there's a subtle message in that family isn't really important. But here's the curious thing. Go back to the first stat that I gave you. Most Americans will say, we would be better off if we went back to what we had before. Right? And so I think the opportunity to be lights is tapping into a longing that is there with a lot of people. I'm not saying there won't be critics, because you brought up the critics of the whole wife submitting to her husband, how awful that is for women, you know, the enslavement and mistreatment of women. There are always going to be critics, but remember that the vast majority of those critics are unhappy where they are right now with the way they've ordered things. And there's this inner longing in a lot of people that says, it would sure be better if we could go back together. So, we have an opportunity to show that. Again, Matthew 5:16. Let your light shine before men, and they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven.
Well, I think in times past, there was a husband and wife and 2.5 children.
Right.
And we had this idea of an idyllic family. But I think back then, people just didn't divorce. There was still infidelity. There was still homosexuality. People stayed together through it.
Did we talk about this in the class, my Ephesians class, and this class kind of merged together in my mind? But we talked about the fact that divorce was a big, no-fault divorce was a big flipping point when people started walking away from their marriages more frequently. And you're going back down to the 50s and 60s. Didn't I tell you all that my parents were like, my mom was one of the two kids in her high school? I think I said that in this class. And so that goes back to the 50s, right?
Your mom was the what?
My mom was only one of two kids in her high school that had a broken home.
Oh.
Divorced parents. Yeah. Only two kids. In the it's Cypher High School, entire school. Which probably wasn't all that remarkable back then. Okay. So.
And I said back then. Oh, back then. Yeah. Way back.
I'm going to be sending you to another class. Really, really bothered. Have y'all? I saw a video a while back where they were asking young people, what year do you have to be born to be old? Have any of y'all seen that? It really was upsetting to me because there were these young people saying things like, well, anyone whose birthday starts with a 19 is old. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? 1999 was like yesterday.
Can I make a comment? Not about you being old. They would beat that horse. About, like, I think, and I don't even know if this goes with what you're trying to say here, but I think there's also a misconception by some people that aren't Christians or in a church situation where you talked about submitting to your husbands and going to church, you know, all the time and things like that, where, you know, they think it's something you have to do. Like, the husband is just, like, basically got you under his thumb and you're doing everything that he says and you have no life. And I think that might be some people's concept of it. And it's really not like that, because if you're in a loving home, you're working together.
Let me hold that thought, because the next thing I wanted to do was to point out the fact that God does call us to something different. And I wanted to quantify that a little bit. If you go to Ephesians, how many of you are in the Ephesians class? Okay, deeply apologize, because you're going to get this again on Wednesday. And that's purely accidental. And I wound up at this point in Ephesians and with this class at this time. I don't know how that happened. But if you go to Ephesians 5, I want you to go there, please. Paul talks about all of these relationships. And as we read this, we realize he calls us to do family different. And so, for example, if you look at Ephesians 5, 22, 23, and 24, among other things, he tells wives to submit to their husbands. And Greg is right. This is, oddly, an extraordinarily controversial issue in our culture today. You say wives are to submit to their husbands, that language that's on the slide, and in a vast majority of women's minds, what that means is they want me to be the slave of my husband. Just you described it. You know, I'm under his thumb, and he's gonna rule over me, and I'm just gonna be a doormat to him, right? It's demeaning and insulting to women. And I will tell you that I just find that really silly that people would think that. Largely because everyone submits all the time, right? Do any of y'all feel demeaned tonight? Because you're all submitting to me. I mean, is that true? It's the nature of the classroom arrangement. Well, I mean, some of y'all submit better than others. Y'all did it. But no. It's the nature of the classroom arrangement. The teacher has the authority to run the class, and the students have to submit to that authority. Now, I like to have fun and mess around with that, but the truth is, you know, at some point we have to stop and move on. And I've said that to y'all. Okay, last comment. We got to move on, right? And what do y'all do? Most of you work with me on that. Right? So.
But all it takes is knowing. Everybody in this room has known a man in the church who has abused that authority.
Sure.
And a woman who has. So, I mean, I'm just saying, for the world, all it takes is knowing.
No, exactly. And by the way, have you ever seen a teacher abuse this authority in the class?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, John sits in here sometimes. Where is he tonight?
He's in Arkansas having a great time.
Tell him we talked about it. He might be streaming, right?
But you know.
Hold on, let me get this up.
Submit.
John, do you know what John is here? He's a shepherd. We have a shepherd in every class. Why? They're keeping an eye on things, as they should. And in fact, if I got a line and did something out of line in my teaching, what would you all expect John to do? To deal with it, right? And I'd have to submit to him. In fact, if I was saying all kind of wrong stuff and John sat there quietly, you know what y'all would say. There was an elder sitting right there. He didn't say a word, right? I'm sorry, Beth.
No, that's okay. But you hit on the word is authority. Yep. This world hates authority, whether it's in the family, It's in the church. It's in the government. Everybody wants to rebel because I know better.
Yep.
What's better for me. Mm-hmm. And it's the authority in everything people rebelling.
Yeah, guys, we're being played by the feminists, and we have been for decades. This is a non-issue. Yes, there are examples of husbands who are abusive of their role, their headship role in the home, and there are wives who are equally unkind in the way they behave toward them. People misbehave in marriage. Let's just be honest about that. But they also misbehave in classrooms, and they also misbehave out in culture, and they also misbehave on the job. Nothing to do with it, does it? In fact, I will tell you what I think Paul mentions this here. Isn't it interesting? In fact, he mentioned it in Titus when he was talking about this. He mentions it in 1 Peter again and again and again. He keeps talking to wives about submission. Why?
It wasn't
proper.
Do we need to hear it?
No, it's hard, right? It is a woman making herself vulnerable and trusting this guy to be a leader for her family. And it's a hard thing to do. By the way, could I just suggest that if you got daughters and granddaughters who aren't married yet, that going into marriage, this is the question they need to be able to answer. Are you comfortable trusting him and putting yourself in his hands? I wonder if that could break up some engagements that need to be ruined. So I don't think trying to explain that to people out in culture, I think Greg was spot on what he said from the beginning. Oh, people think this is horrible. I don't think you can explain it. What can you do? Live it. Before people. How many women do you know that are successful and capable and do great things and they have a wonderful marriage to their spouse to whom they submit? How many women do you know like that? I know tons of them, seen them all my whole life. I don't know very many people who are living with husbands that are awful to them. But you know what they are? Something ought to be done about that. Ought to be called out. You see what I'm saying? I think we have an opportunity to live that before people. And I think you could go through all of this and say that. What does he say to men? Not just love your wife. You love her like Christ loves you, right? Sacrificial. He gets down there, what's it in verse 28? And he talks about this nourishing and cherishing thing. And you know why I think he says some of that? Because I think that's hard for men. In fact, I think in the eyes of some men, this nourishing and cherishing thing isn't very manly. And so there's an opportunity for men to be a light and to show that better way. Children! What's he tell them? Obey and?
Honor.
Obey and honor. I tell kids that means you have to do it and you have to like it, right? And especially when you are, you know what's really cool? We like have four young people. No, we can probably throw y'all in there too. Actually, in the classroom. In fact.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Because I'm thinking I could throw you in on this too. Almost all of them, these guys are just fresh back from college. Remember what a tough summer that was? Your first summer back from college? And you'd like been free for 9 months. And I went out the door one night and my mom used the word curfew with me. And I'm like, excuse me? What do you mean curfew, right? So as you get older and you're more independent and you want that independence while you're still on the phone plan, which to me is hypocritical. You guys have a golden opportunity to show the people around you what it means to honor father and mother. Who's he talk to next in 6:4? Fathers, be the head. Make sure your children are brought up correctly. Isn't that interesting? Who bears the responsibility for seeing to it that children are raised properly?
The husband telling his wife to take
Kenneth will remain after class for anybody that wants to talk to him about that. I do think.
Had to throw that.
Yeah, I do think. But
if
I do think
Wiser required to submit, we are the head, and it's our responsibility. Right? So we have the ultimate responsibility.
We do. We have to make sure this gets done. That doesn't mean we don't work in concert with each other. I submit to the elders, but we work in concert with each other to be sure that teaching gets done in this church. But at the end of the day, who is responsible for this church getting the teaching it needs? The shepherds are. That's exactly right. And isn't that interesting? Because in our culture, who do we think of as taking care of the children getting raised? Moms, right? So guys, what an opportunity to be an example of what God had in mind from the beginning. I would love to talk so much about that one. I do want to tell you a couple of things, and some of this you guys have already brought up. Because before we go, I want to get this down into real life. Think about 5:16. That men may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. I don't think this is stuff that you'll be able to sell by talking. I think you get to sell this by living. And so one specific thing I would say, and I heard someone already bring this up, don't be numbered with the grumblers. Ladies, you ever been around women that trash their husbands? Or guys who were swapping stories about whose wife was worse? Oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you what mine did, right? What do you do with that? Honest, what do you do with that?
Well, you don't take part in the conversation.
Be the weirdo. I'm serious about that. You know, sometimes light is painful. Like when you've been in a dark room. Anyone ever done this to you? In a dark room for a while and someone comes on and it hits the light. Boom, right? Light is not pleasant. In fact, you may have said something like, turn that off. It's painful, right? And in that moment, that is exactly the example that a disciple ought to set. One, by not joining that. Want to do something better?
Tell them all.
Let me tell you. If y'all missed that in the online audience, Addie said, tell them off.
I think she meant turn it off. Turn off the light.
She said no.
Now, I've had Addie in class too long. I knew exactly where she was going. No, but I do think there's something ought to be said. Wouldn't it be awkward, guys, to be around with a bunch of your friends and just say, man, I still think this is the way to talk about wives. Sorry about you guys. I have a great wife. She is terrific to me. I have nothing bad to say about her.
But you can also hit it with a compassionate point, too, and just be like, I'm so sorry that you're dealing with that. And, you know, if you ever need to talk, you know, we can talk. But try to steer the conversation into a more positive or more helpful way.
Don't be part of it. Ephesians 4:29 says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but only such as word is good for edification, according to the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. That's what people need at a moment like that. I'm missing an opportunity to be a light. And then the other thing I think we need to do, if you think about Matthew 5:16, there's actually something unsaid there that we need to say. See your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. If the good work is the marriage you cultivated with your spouse, how do people know God gets the credit for that?
You have to tell them about that.
You've got to make that connection. People aren't going to look your at marriage and say, oh, John and Bev, it's all God, man. I can just see that. Right? What are they going to have to do? Somebody's going to have to say, I have what I have because of God. Who said that earlier? Yeah. Somebody brought that up. Yeah, I have what I have because of God. Or when somebody's looking at your kids and bragging on your kids, man, it's so cool that you like said, come get in the car. And your kids actually come and get in the car. What a novel concept. Don't know how we would raise our kids without God. Now, hang on. When you say that, one of two things is going to happen. Either they'll say, don't bring up God, don't bring up kids no more because she goes God on you, and that's not good. Or the other possibility is these parents longing for family that's normal will say, I'd like to know more about that.
Can I issue a challenge to
Yeah, husband? Yeah, last word.
When we were first married, we were at Southside where Kenneth's father was, and one of the elders told Bill, you need to open the car door for your wife, and he still does this. And so I challenge husbands to do that. People notice.
Yeah, these people see. Thank you for that.
Wilson Usher.
What's that?
Wilson Usher.
Oh, I've heard that name before.